her wince.
"The tall one," she said. "He's a mage, isn't he?"
Whiskey Jack grunted, then said, "His name's Quick Ben."
"Not the one he was born with?"
"No."
She rolled her shoulders against the weight of her cloak, momentarily easing the dull pain in her lower back.
"I should know him, Sergeant. That kind of power gets noticed. He's no novice."
"No," Whiskey Jack replied. "He isn't."
She felt herself getting angry.
"I want an explanation. What's happening here?"
Whiskey Jack grimaced.
"Not much, by the looks of it."
He raised his voice.
"Quick, then!"
The mage looked over.
"Some last-minute negotiations, Sergeant,"
he said, flashing a white grin.
"Hood's breath!"
Tattersail sighed, turning away. The girl, she saw, still stood at the hill's crest and seemed to be studying the Maranth columns passing into the city. As if sensing Tattersail's attention, her head snapped around. Her expression startled the sorceress. Tattersail pulled her eyes away.
"Is this what's left of your squad, Sergeant? Two desert marauders and a blood-hungry recruit?"
Whiskey Jack's tone was flat.
"I have 7 left."
"This morning?"
15.
"Something's wrong here," she thought.
Feeling a need to say something, she said,
"Better than most."
She cursed silently as the blood drained from the sergeant's face.
"Still,"
she added,
"I'm sure they were good men, the ones you lost."
"Good at dying," he said.
The brutality of his words shocked her. Mentally reeling, she squeezed shut her eyes, fighting back tears of bewilderment and frustration.
"Too much has happened. I'm not ready for this. I'm not ready for Whiskey Jack, a man buckling under his own legend, a man who's climbed more than one mountain of the dead in service to the Empire."
The Bridgeburners hadn't shown themselves much over the past 3 years. Since the siege began, they had been assigned the task of undermining Pale's massive, ancient walls. That order had come straight from the capital, and it was either a cruel joke or the product of appalling ignorance. The whole valley was a glacial dump, a rock pile plugging a crevice that reached so far underground, even Tattersail's mages had trouble finding its bottom.
"They've been underground 3 years running. When was the last time they saw the sun?" she thought.
Tattersail stiffened suddenly.
"Sergeant,"
she opened her eyes to him,
"you've been in your tunnels since this morning?"
With sinking understanding, she watched anguish flit across the man's face.
"What tunnels?"
he said softly, then moved to stride past her. She reached out and closed her hand on his arm. A shock seemed to run through him.
"Whiskey Jack," she whispered. "You've guessed as much about me, about what happened here on this hill, all these soldiers."
She hesitated, then said,
"Failure's something we share. I'm sorry."
He pulled away, eyes averted.
"Don't be, sorceress."
He met her gaze.
"Regret's not something we can afford."
She watched him walk to his soldiers. A young woman's voice spoke directly behind Tattersail.
"We numbered 1,400 this morning, sorceress."
Tattersail turned. At this close range, she saw that the girl couldn't be more than 15 years old. The exception was her eyes, which held the dull glint of weathered onyx. They looked ancient. Every emotion eroded away into extinction.
"And now?"
The girl's shrug was almost careless.
30,
maybe 35. 4 of the 5 tunnels fell in completely. We were in the 5th and dug our way out. Fiddler and Hedge are working on the others, but they figure everybody else has been buried for good. They tried to round up some help.
A cold, knowing smile spread across her mud-streaked face.
But your master, the High Mage, stopped them.
Taishun did what? Why?
The girl frowned as if disappointed. Then she simply walked away, stopping at the hill's crest and facing the city again. Tattersail stared after her. The girl had thrown that last statement at her as if hunting for some particular response.
Complicity? She thought.
In any case, a clean miss.
Taishun's not making any friends. Good.
The day had been a disaster, and the blame fell squarely at the High Mage's feet. She stared at Pale, then lifted her gaze to the smoke-filled sky above it. That massive, looming shape she had greeted every morning for the last 3 years was indeed gone. She still had trouble believing it, despite the evidence of her eyes.
You warned us,
she whispered to the empty sky as the memories of the morning returned.
You warned us, didn't you?
She had been sleeping with Kalat the past 4 months, a little diversionary pleasure to ease the boredom of a siege that wasn't going anywhere. At least, that was how she explained to herself their unprofessional conduct. It was more than that, of course, much more. But being honest with herself had never been one of Tattersail's strengths. The magical summons, when it came, awakened her before Kalat. The mage's small but well-proportioned body was snug in the many soft pillows of her flesh. She opened her eyes to find him, clinging to her like a child. Then he, too, sensed the calling and awoke to her smile.
Herlock?
He asked, shivering as he climbed out from under the blankets. Tattersail grimaced.
Who else? The man never sleeps. What now, I wonder?
He stood, looking around for his tunic. She was watching him. He was so thin, making them an odd combination. Through the faint dawn light seeping through the canvas tent walls, the sharp, bony angles of his body looked soft, almost childlike. For a man a century old, he carried it well.
Herlock's been running errands for Dujek, she said. It's probably just an update.
Kalat grunted as he pulled on his boots.
That's what you get for taking command of the Cadrasail. Anyway, it was easier saluting Nadurian, let me tell you. Whenever I look at you, I just want to... Stick to business, Kalat,
Tattersail said, meaning it with humor, though it came out with enough of an edge to make Kalat glance at her sharply.
Something up?
He asked quietly, the old frown finding its familiar lines on his high forehead.
Thought I'd got rid of those, she thought.
Tattersail sighed.
Can't tell, except that Herlock's contacted both of us. If it was just a report, you'd still be snoring.
In growing tension, they finished dressing in silence. Less than an hour later, Kalat would be incinerated beneath a wave of blue fire, and ravens would be answering Tattersail's despairing scream. But for the moment, the two mages were readying themselves for an unscheduled gathering at High Fist Dujek One Arm's command tent. In the muddy path beyond Kalat's tent, soldiers of the Last Watch huddled around braziers filled with burning horse dung, holding out hands to the heat. Few walked the pathways, the hour still too early. Row upon row of grey tents climbed the hills overlooking the plain that surrounded the city of Pale. Regimental standards ruffled sullenly in a faint breeze. The wind had turned since last night, carrying to Tattersail the stench of the latrine trenches. Overhead, the remaining handful of stars dimmed into insignificance in the lightening sky. The world seemed almost peaceful. Drawing her cloak against the chill, Tattersail paused outside the tent and turned to study the enormous mountain hanging suspended a quarter mile above the city of Pale. She scanned the battered face of Moonsworn, its name for as long as she could remember. Ragged as a blackened tooth, the basalt fortress was home to the most powerful enemy the Malazan Empire had ever faced. High above the earth, Moonsworn could not be breached by siege. Even Lassine's own undead army, the Talan Imas, who travelled as easily as dust on the wind, were unable, or unwilling, to penetrate its magical defences. Pale's wizards had found a powerful ally. Tattersail recalled that the Empire had locked horns with the moon's mysterious lord once before, in the days of the Emperor. Things had threatened to get ugly, but then Moonsworn withdrew from the game. No one still living knew why. Just one of the thousand secrets the Emperor took with him to his watery grave. The moon's reappearance here on Genobacchus had been a surprise, and this time there was no last-minute reprieve. A half-dozen legions of the sorceress Tista Andii descended from Moonsworn, and under the command of a warlord named Caladan Brood, they joined forces with the Crimson Guard mercenaries. Together, the two armies proceeded to drive back the Malaz Fifth Army, which had been pushing eastward along the northern edge of Rivi Plain. For the past 4 years, the battered Fifth had been bogged down in Black Dog Forest, forcing them to make a stand against Brood and the Crimson Guard. It was a stand, fast becoming a death sentence. But, clearly, Caladan Brood and the Tista Andii weren't the only inhabitants of Moonsworn. An unseen lord remained in command of the fortress, bringing it here and sealing a pact with Pale's formidable wizards. Tattersail's cadre had little hope of magically challenging such opposition. So the siege had ground to a halt, with the exception of the bridge burners, who never relaxed their stubborn efforts to undermine the city's ancient walls.
"Stay," she prayed to Moonsworn. "Turn your face endlessly, and keep the smell of blood, the screams of the dying, from settling on this land. Wait for us to blink first."
Kallet waited beside her. He said nothing, understanding the ritual this had become. It was one of the many reasons why Tattersail loved the man. As a friend, of course. Nothing serious. Nothing frightening in the love for a friend.
"I sense impatience in Hairlock," Kallet murmured beside her. She sighed. "I do, too. That's why I'm reluctant." "I know, but we can't dally too long, Sail."
He grinned mischievously.
"Bad form. Can't have them jumping to conclusions, can we? They wouldn't have to jump very far. Anyway," his smile faltered slightly, "let's get going."
A few minutes later, they arrived at the command tent. The lone marine standing guard at the flap seemed nervous as he saluted the two mages. Tattersail paused and searched his eyes.
"Seventh Regiment?"
Avoiding her gaze, the guard nodded.
"Yes, Sorceress, Third Squad."
"Thought you looked familiar. Give my regards to Sergeant Rusty."
She stepped closer.
"Something in the air, soldier?"
He blinked.
"High in the air, Sorceress. High as they come."
Tattersail glanced at Kallet, who had paused at the tent flap. Kallet puffed out his cheeks, making a comical face.
"Thought I smelled him."
She winced at this confirmation. The guard, she saw, was sweating under his iron helmet.
"Thanks for the warning, soldier."
"Always an even trade, Sorceress."
The man snapped a second salute. This one sharper, and in its way more personal.
"Years and years of this," Tattersail thought. "Insisting I'm family to them. One of the Second Army. The oldest intact force. One of the Emperor's own. Always an even trade, Sorceress. Save our skins. We'll save yours. Family, after all. Why then do I always feel so estranged from them?
Tattersail returned the salute. They entered the command tent. She sensed immediately the presence of power, what Callot called smell. It made his eyes water. It gave her a migraine headache. This particular emanation was a power she knew well, and it was anathema to her own, which made the headaches all the worse. Inside the tent, lanterns cast a dim, smoky light on the dozen or so wooden chairs in the first compartment. A camp table off to one side held a tin pitcher of watered wine and six tarnished cups that glistened with droplets of condensation. Callot muttered beside her.
Hood's breath sail. I hate this.
As her eyes adjusted to the gloom, Tattersail saw, through the opening that led into the tent's second compartment, a familiar, robed figure. He leaned with long-fingered hands on Dujek's map table. His magenta cloak rippled like water, though he remained motionless.
Oh, really now? Tattersail whispered. Just my thought,
Callot said, wiping his eyes.
Do you think, she said as they took their seats, it's a studied pose?
Callot grinned.
Absolutely. Lassine's high mage couldn't read a battle map if his life depended on it. So long as our lives don't depend on it.
A voice spoke from a chair near them.
Today we work.
Tattersail scowled at the preternatural darkness in breathing the chair.
You're as bad as Taishran, Hairlock, and be glad I didn't decide to sit in that chair.
Dully, a row of yellow teeth appeared. Then the rest of the mage took shape as Hairlock relinquished the spell. Beads of sweat marked the man's flat, scarred brow and shaved pate. Nothing unusual there. Hairlock would sweat in an ice pit. He held his head at an angle, achieving in his expression something like smug detachment combined with contempt. He fixed his small dark eyes on Tattersail.
You remember work, don't you?
His smile broadened, further flattening his mashed, misaligned nose.
It's what you were doing before you started rolling in the sack with dear Callot here, before you went soft.
Tattersail drew breath for a retort, but was interrupted by Callot's slow, easy drawl.
Lonely, Hairlock. Should I tell you that the camp followers demand double the coin from you?
He waved a hand as if clearing away unsavory thoughts.
The simple fact is, Dujek chose Tattersail to command the cadre after Nadurian's untimely demise at Mott Wood. You may not like it, but that's just too bad. It's the price you pay for ambivalence.
Hairlock reached down and brushed a speck of dirt from his satin slippers, which had, improbably, escaped unmarred the muddy streets outside.
Blind faith, dear comrades, is for fools.
He was interrupted by the tent flap swishing aside. High fist Dujek one arm entered, the soap of his morning shave still clotting the hair in his ears, the smell of cinnamon water wafting after him. Over the years, Tattersail had come to attach much to that aroma. Security, stability, sanity. Dujek One Arm represented all those things, and not just to her, but to the army that fought for him. As he stopped now in the center of the room and surveyed the three mages, she leaned back slightly, and from under heavy lids, studied the high fist. 3 years of enforced passivity in this siege seemed to have acted like a tonic on the aging man. He looked more like 50 rather than his 79 years. His grey eyes remained sharp and unyielding in his tanned, lean face. He stood straight, which made him seem taller than his 5.5 feet, wearing simple, unadorned leathers, stained as much by sweat as by the imperial magenta dye. The stump of his left arm, just below the shoulder, was wrapped in leather strips. His hairy chalk-white calves were visible between the sharkskin straps of the Napan sandals. Kalat withdrew a handkerchief from his sleeve and tossed it to Dujek. The high fist snagged it.
Again! Damn that barber! He growled, wiping the soap from his jaw and ears. I swear he does it on purpose!
He balled the handkerchief and flung it onto Kalat's lap.
Now, we're all here. Good. Regular business first. Herlock, you finished drawing with the boys below?
Herlock stifled a yawn.
Some sapper named Fiddler took me in, showed me around.
He paused to pluck lint from his brocaded sleeve, then met Dujek's eyes.
Give them 6 or 7 years, and they might have reached the city walls by then.
It's pointless, Tattersail said, which is what I put in my report.
She squinted up at Dujek,
assuming it ever made it to the Imperial Court.
Camel's still swimming,
Kalat said. Dujek grunted, as close as he ever got to laughing.
All right, Cadre, listen carefully. Two things.
A faint scowl crossed his scarred features.
One, the Empress has sent a claw. They're in the city, hunting down Pale's wizards.
A chill danced up Tattersail's spine. No one liked having the claws around. Those Imperial assassins, Lassine's favored weapon, kept their poison daggers sharp for anyone and everyone, Malazan's included. It seemed Kalat was thinking the same thing, for he sat up sharply.
If they're here for any other reason...
They'll have to come through me first,
Dujek said, his lone hand reaching down to rest on the pommel of his longsword.
He has an audience, Tattersail thought. There, in the other room. He's telling the man commanding the claw how things stand. Shadoon'll bless him.
Herlock spoke.
They'll go to ground. They're wizards, not idiots.
It was a moment before Tattersail understood the man's comment.
Oh, right, she thought. Pale's wizards.
Dujek glanced down at Herlock, gauging. Then he nodded.
Two. We're attacking Moonspawn today.
In the other compartment, High Mage Tayshrin turned at these words and approached slowly. Within his hood a broad smile creased his dark face, a momentary cracking of seamless features. The smile passed quickly, the ageless skin becoming smooth once again.
Hello, my colleagues, he said, droll and menacing all at once.
Herlock snorted.
Keep the melodrama to a minimum, Tayshrin, and we'll all be happier.
Ignoring Herlock's comment, the High Mage continued.
The Empress has lost her patience with Moonspawn.
Dujek cocked his head and interrupted, his voice softly grating.
The Empress is scared enough to hit first and hit hard. Tell it plain, Magicka, this is your front line you're talking to here. Show some respect, damn it.
The High Mage shrugged.
Of course, High Fist.
He faced the Cadre.
Your group, myself, and 3 other High Mages will strike Moonspawn within the hour. The North Campaign has drawn most of the edifice's inhabitants away. We believe that the Moon's Lord is alone. For almost 3 years, his mere presence has been enough to hold us in check. This morning, my colleagues, we will test this Lord's mettle.
And hope to hood he's been bluffing all this time,
Dujek added, a scowl deepening the lines on his forehead.
Any questions?
How soon can I get a transfer?
Kalat asked. Tattersail cleared her throat.
What do we know about the Lord of Moonspawn?
Scant little, I'm afraid, Tayshrin said, his eyes veiled. Artista Andy, for certain. An archmage.
Herlock leaned forward and deliberately spat at the floor in front of Tayshrin.
Tista Andy, High Mage? I think we can be a little more specific than that. Don't you?
Tattersail's migraine worsened. She realized she was holding her breath, slowly forced it out as she gauged Taishran's reaction to the man's words and to the traditional Seven Cities challenge.
An archmage, Taishran repeated. Perhaps the archmage of the Tista Andi. Dear Hairlock, he added, his voice lowering a notch, your primitive tribal gestures remain quaint, if somewhat tasteless.
Hairlock bared his teeth.
The Tista Andi are Mother Dug's first children. You felt the tremors through the warrens of sorcery, Taishran. So have I. Ask Dujek about the reports coming down from the North Campaign. Elder magic. Kurald Galain. The Lord of Moonspawn is the Master Archmage. You know his name as well as I do.
I know nothing of the sort, the High Mage snapped, losing his calm at last.
Perhaps you'd care to enlighten us, Hairlock, and then I can begin inquiries as to your sources.
Ah! Hairlock bolted forward in his chair, an eager malice in his taut face.
A threat from the High Mage. Now we're getting somewhere. Answer me this, then. Why only three other High Mages? We've hardly been thinned out that badly. More! Why didn't we do this 2 years ago?
Whatever was building between Hairlock and Taishran was interrupted by Dujek, who growled wordlessly, then said,
We're desperate, mage. The North Campaign has gone sour. The Fifth is damn near gone, and won't be getting any reinforcements until next spring. The point is, the Moonslord could have his army back any day now. I don't want to have to send you up against an army of Tista Andi, and I'm sure as Hood don't want the Second having to show two fronts with a relieving force coming down on them. Bad tactics. And whoever this Caladan brood is, he's shown himself adept at making us pay for our mistakes.
Caladan brood,
Calad murmured.
I swear I've heard that name somewhere before. Odd that I've never given it much thought.
Tattersail's eyes narrowed on Taishran. Calat was right. The name of the man commanding the Tista Andi alongside the Crimson Guard did sound familiar, but in an old way, echoing ancient legends, perhaps, or some epic poem. The High Mage met her gaze, flat and calculating.
The need, he said, turning to the others, for justifications has passed. The Empress has commanded, and we must obey.
Hairlock snorted a second time.
Speaking of twisting arms,
he sat back, still smiling contemptuously at Taishran.
Remember how we played cat and mouse at Arran? This plan has your stink on it. You've been itching for a chance like this for a long time.
His grin turned savage.
Who, then, are the other three High Mages? Let me guess. Enough.
Taishran stepped close to Hairlock, who went very still, eyes glittering. The lanterns had dimmed. Calat used the handkerchief in his lap to wipe tears from his cheeks.
Power, thought Tattersail. Oh, damn. My head feels ready to crack, wide open. Very well, Hairlock whispered. Let's lay it out on the table. I'm sure the High Fist will appreciate you putting all his suspicions in the proper order. Make it plain, old friend.
Tattersail glanced at Dujek. The commander's face had closed up, his sharp eyes narrow and fixed on Taishran. He was doing some hard thinking. Calat leaned against her.
What's going on, Sail? No idea, she whispered. But it's heating up nicely.
Though she had made her comment light, her mind was whirling around a cold knot of fear. Herlock had been with the Empire longer than she had, or Kallet. He'd been among the sorcerers who'd fought against the Malazans in Seven Cities, before Arenfell and the Holy Falard were scattered, before he'd been given the choice of death or service to the new masters. He had joined the Second's cadre at Pan Potsdam. Like Dujek himself, he had been there, with the Emperor's old guard, when the first vipers of usurpation had stirred, the day the Empire's first sword was betrayed and brutally murdered. Herlock knew something. But what?
All right, Dujek drawled. We've got work to do. Let's get at it.
Tattersail sighed, old One Arm's way with words. She swung a look on the man. She knew him well, not as a friend. Dujek didn't make friends, but as the best military mind left in the Empire. If, as Herlock had just implied, the High Fist was being betrayed by someone, somewhere, and if Taishren was part of it.
"We're a bent bow," Kallet had once said of One Arm's host. "And beware the Empire when it breaks. Seven City soldiery. The closeted ghosts of the conquered, but unconquerable."
Taishren gestured to her and to the other mages. Tattersail rose, as did Kallet. Herlock remained seated, eyes closed as if asleep. Kallet said to Dujek,
"About that transfer."
"Later," the High Fist grunted. "Paperwork's a nightmare when you've only got one arm."
He surveyed his cadre and was about to add something, but Kallet spoke first.
"And Ormondaris?"
Herlock's eyes snapped open, found Taishren with bright pleasure.
"Ah,"
he said, into the silence following Kallet's single pronouncement.
"Of course. Three more High Mages. Only three."
Tattersail stared at Dujek's pale, still face.
"The poem," she said quietly. "I remember now. Caledon brood, the men hired one, winter-bearing, barrowed and sorrowless."
Kallet picked up the next lines.
"In a tomb, bereaved of words, and in his hands that have crushed anvils,"
Tattersail continued,
"the hammer of his song, he lives asleep, so give silent warning to all. Wake him not. Wake him not."
Everyone in the compartment was staring at Tattersail now as her last words fell away.
"He's awake, it seems,"
she said, her mouth dry.
"An Ormondaris, the epic poem by Fisher Keltath."
"The poem's not about Caledon Brood," Dujek said, frowning.
"No,"
she agreed.
"It's mostly about his companion."
Herlock climbed slowly to his feet. He stepped close to Taishren.
"Anamanda Rake, Lord of the Tista Andi, who are the souls of Starless Night. Rake, the mane of chaos. That's who the Moon's Lord is. And you're pitting four High Mages and a single cadre against him."
Taishren's smooth face held the faintest sheen of sweat now.
"The Tista Andi," he said in an even voice, "are not like us. To you they may seem unpredictable, but they aren't. Just different. They have no cause of their own. They simply move from one human drama to the next. Do you actually think Anomanda Rake will stay and fight?" "Has Caledon Brood backed away?" Herlock snapped. "He is not Tista Andi, Herlock. He's human. Some say with Barghast blood. But nonetheless, he shares nothing of Elder blood or its ways."
Tattersail said,
"You're counting on Rake betraying Pale's wizards, betraying the pact made between them. The risk is not as overreaching as it may seem,"
the High Mage said.
Belladan has done the research in Genabaris, sorceress. Some new scrolls of Gothos Folly were discovered in a mountain fastness beyond Black Dog Forest. Among the writings are discussions of the Tista Andii and other peoples from the Elder Age. And remember, Moonspawn has retreated from a direct confrontation with the Empire before.
The waves of fear sweeping through Tattersail made her knees weak. She sat down again, heavily enough to make the camp chair creak.
"You've condemned us to death," she said, "if your gamble proves wrong. Not just us, High Mage, all of One Arm's host."
Taishrin swung round slowly, putting his back to Hairlock and the others.
"Empress Lassine's orders," he said, without turning. "Our colleagues come by warren. When they arrive, I will detail the positioning. That is all."
He strode into the map room, resumed his original stance. Dujek seemed to have aged in front of Tattersail's eyes. Swiftly, she slid her glance from him, too anguished to meet the abandonment in his eyes and the suspicion curdling beneath its surface.
"Coward," Tattersail thought. "That's what you are, woman. A coward."
Finally, the high fist cleared his throat.
"Prepare your warrens, Cadre. As usual, always an even trade."
Give the High Mage credit, Tattersail thought. There was Taishrin, standing on the first hill, almost inside the moon's shadow. They had arrayed themselves into three groups, each taking a hilltop on the plain outside Pale's walls. The Cadre's was most distant, Taishrin's the closest. On the center hill stood the three other High Mages. Tattersail knew them all. Nightchill, raven-haired, tall, imperious, and with a cruel streak the old Emperor used to drool over. At her side, her lifelong companion, Belladan, Skullcrusher, a Thelomen giant who would test his prodigious strength against the moon's portal, should it come to that. And Acheronis, fire-wielder, short and round, his burning staff taller than a spear. The second and sixth armies had formed ranks on the plain, weapons bared and awaiting the call to march on the city when the time came. 7,000 veterans and 4,000 recruits. The Black Maranth legions lined the ridge to the west, a quarter mile distant. No wind stirred the midday air. Biting midges roved invisible clouds through the soldiers waiting below. The sky was overcast, the cloud cover thin but absolute. Tattersail stood on the hill's crest, sweat running down under her clothing, and watched the soldiers on the plain before, facing her meager cadre. At full strength, six mages should have been arrayed behind her, but there were only two. Off to one side, Hairlock waited, wrapped in the dark grey raincloak that was his battle attire, looking smug. Kallet nudged Tattersail and jerked his head toward Hairlock.
"What's he so happy about?"
"Hairlock!" Tattersail called. The man swung his head.
"Were you right about the three High Mages?"
He smiled and turned away again.
"I hate it when he's hiding something," Kallet said.
The sorceress grunted.
"He's added something up, all right. What's so particular about Nightchill, Belladan, and Acheronis? Why did Taishrin pick them, and how did Hairlock know he'd pick them?" "Questions, questions," Kallet sighed. "All three are old hands at this kind of stuff. Back in the days of the Emperor, they each commanded a company of adepts, when the Empire had enough mages in the ranks to form actual companies. Acheronis climbed through the ranks in the Felari campaign, and Belladan and Nightchill were from before even then. Came down from Fen on the Quan mainland during the Unification Wars." "All old hands," Tattersail mused. "As you said, none have been active lately, have they? Their last campaign was Seven Cities.
where Acheronis took a beating in the Panpots and Wastes. He was left hanging. The Emperor had just been assassinated. Everything was chaotic. The Talani Mass refused to acknowledge the new Empress, marched themselves off into the Jag Old Han. Rumour has it, they're back, at half strength. Whatever they ran into out there wasn't pleasant.
Tattersail nodded.
Nightchill and Belladon were told to report to Nathilog, left sitting on their hands for the past 6, 7 years. Until Taishrin sent the Thelemon off to Jenobaris to study a pile of ancient scrolls. Of all things. I'm frightened,
Tattersail admitted.
Very frightened. Did you see Ducek's face? He knew something. A realization. And it hit him like a dagger in the back.
Time to work,
Hairlock called. Callot and Tattersail swung around. A shiver ran through her. Moonspawn had been revolving steadily for the last 3 years. It had just stopped. Near its very top, on the side facing them, was a small ledge, and a shadowed recess had appeared. A portal. No movement showed yet.
He knows, she whispered. And he isn't running,
Callus added. Down on the first hill, High Mage Taishrin rose and lifted his arms out to the sides. A wave of golden flame spanned his hands, then rolled upward, growing as it raced toward Moonspawn. The spell crashed against the black rock, sending chunks hurtling out, then down. A rain of death descended into the City of Pale, and among the Malazan legions waiting in the plain.
It's begun,
Callot breathed. Silence answered Taishrin's first attack, save for the faint scatter of rubble on the city's tiled rooftops and the distant cries of wounded soldiers on the plain. Everyone's eyes were trained upward. The reply was not what anyone expected. A black cloud enshrouded Moonspawn, followed by faint shrieking. A moment later, the cloud spread out, fragmenting, and Tattersail realized what she was seeing. Ravens. Thousands upon thousands of great ravens. They must have nested among the crags and pocks in the moon's surface. Their shrieks grew more defined, a caterwaul of outrage. They wheeled out from the moon, their 15-foot wingspans catching the wind and lifting them high above the city and plain. Fear lurched into terror into Tattersail's heart. Hairlock barked a laugh and whirled to them.
These are the moon's messengers, colleagues!
Madness glittered in his eyes.
These carrion birds!
He flung back his cloak and raised his arms.
Imagine a lord who's kept 30,000 great ravens well-fed!
A figure had appeared on the ledge before the portal, its arms upraised, long silver hair blowing from its head.
Mane of Chaos, Tattersail thought. Anamant of Rake, Lord of the Black-Skinned Tista Andi, who has looked down on 100,000 winters, who has tasted the blood of dragons, who leads the last of his kind. Seated in the throne of sorrow and a kingdom tragic and fey. A kingdom with no land to call its own.
Anomanda Rake looked tiny against the backdrop of his edifice, almost insubstantial at this distance. The illusion was about to be shattered. She gasped as the aura of his power bloomed outward.
To see it at such a distance.
Channel your warrens,
Tattersail commanded, her voice cracking.
Now!
Even as Rake gathered his power, twin balls of blue fire raced upward from the center hill. They struck the moon near its base and rocked it. Taishrin launched another wave of gilden flames, crashing with amber spume and red-tongued smoke. The moon's lord responded. A black, writhing wave rolled down to the first hill. The High Mage was buffeted to his knees, deflecting it, the hilltop around him blighted as the necrous power rolled down the slopes, engulfing nearby ranks of soldiers. Tattersail watched as a midnight flash swallowed the hapless men, followed by a thump that thundered through the earth. When the flash dissipated, the soldiers lay in rotting heaps, mown down like stalks of grain.
Kuralt Galain sorcery, Tattersail thought. Elder magic, the breath of chaos.
Her breaths coming fast and tight in her chest, Tattersail felt her Thyre Warren flow into her. She shaped it, muttering chain words under her breath, then unleashed the power. Kallus followed, drawing from his Mokra Warren. Hairlock surrounded himself in his own mysterious source, and the Cadre entered the fray. Everything narrowed down for Tattersail from then on, yet a part of her mind remained distant, held on a leash of terror, observing with a kind of muffled vision all that happened around her. The world became a living nightmare. Her sorcery flew upward to batter Moonspawn, and sorcery rained downward, indiscriminate and devastating. Earth rose skyward in thundering columns. Rocks ripped through men like hot stones through snow. A downpour of ash descended to cover the living and dead alike. The sky dimmed to pallid rose, the sun a coppery disk behind the haze. She saw a wave sweep past Hairlock's defenses, cutting him in half. His howl was more rage than pain, instantly muted as virulent power washed over Tattersail, and she found her own defenses assailed by the sorcery's cold, screaming will, as it sought to destroy her. She reeled back, brought up short by Kallut, as he added his Mokra power to bolster her faltering parries. Then the assault passed, sweeping on and down the hill to their left. Tattersail had fallen to her knees. Kallut stood over her, chaining words of power around her, his face turned away from Moonspawn, fixed on something or someone down below on the plain. His eyes were wide with terror. Too late, Tattersail understood what was happening. Kallut was defending her at his own expense. A final act, even as he watched his own death erupt around him. A blast of bright fire engulfed him. Abruptly, the net of protection over Tattersail vanished. A wash of crackling heat from where Kallut had stood sent her tumbling to one side. She felt more than heard her own shriek, and her sense of distance closed in then, a layer of mental defense obliterated. Spitting dirt and ashes, Tattersail climbed to her feet and fought on, no longer launching attacks, just struggling to remain alive. Somewhere in the back of her head, a voice was screaming, urgent, panicked.
Kallut had faced the plain, not Moonspawn. He had faced right. Hairlock had been struck from the plain.
She watched as a Khenrillar demon arose beneath Nightchill. Laughing shrilly, the towering gaunt creature tore Nightchill limb from limb. It had begun feeding by the time Belladan arrived. The Theleman bellowed as the demon raked its knife-like talons against his chest. Ignoring the wounds and the blood that sprayed from them, he closed his hands around the demon's head and crushed it. Acheronis unleashed gouts of flame from the staff in his hands until Moonspawn almost disappeared inside a ball of fire. Then ethereal wings of ice closed around the short, fat wizard, freezing him where he stood. An instant later, he was crushed to dust. Magic rained in an endless storm around Taishrin, where he still knelt on the withered, blackened hilltop. But every wave directed his way, he shunted aside, wreaking devastation among the soldiers cowering on the plain. Through the carnage filling the air, through the ash and shrill-tongued ravens, through the raining rocks and the screams of the wounded and dying, through the blood-chilling shrieks of demons flinging themselves into ranks of soldiery. Through it all sounded the steady thunder of the High Mage's onslaught. Enormous cliffs, sheared from the moon's face, and raging with flame and trailing columns of black smoke, fell down into the city of Pale, transforming the city into its own cauldron of death and chaos. Her ears numbed and body throbbing, as if her flesh itself gasped for breath, Tattersail was slow to grasp that the sorcery had ceased. Even the voice shrieking in the back of her mind had fallen silent. She raised bleary eyes to see Moonspawn, billowing smoke and ablaze in a dozen places on its ravaged mien, moving away, pulling back. Then it was past the city, unsteady in its revolutions and leaning to one side. Moonspawn headed south, toward the distant Tarlin Mountains. She looked around, vaguely recalling that a company of soldiers had sought refuge on the blasted summit. Then something had hit her, taking all she had left to resist it. Now, nothing was left of the company but their armor.
Always an even trade, sorceress.
She fought against a sob, then swung her attention to the first hill. Taishran was down but alive. A half-dozen marines scampered up the hillside to gather around the High Mage. A minute later, they carried him away. Beladan, most of his clothing burned away and his flesh scorched red, remained on the center hill, collecting night chills, scattered limbs, and raising his voice in a mournful wail. The sight, in all its horror and pathos, struck Tattersail's heart like a hammer on an anvil. Quickly she turned away.
Damn you, Taishran!
Pale had fallen. The price was one arm's host and four mages. Only now were the Black Maranth legions moving in. Tattersail's jaw clenched, her lips drawing from their fullness into a thin white line. Something tugged at her memory, and she felt a growing certainty that this scene was not yet played out. The sorceress waited.
The Warrens of Magic dwelt in the beyond. Find the gate and nudge it open a crack. What leaks out is yours to shape.
With these words, a young woman set out on the path to sorcery.
Open yourself to the Warren that comes to you, that finds you. Draw forth its power, as much as your body and soul are capable of containing. But remember, when the body fails, the gate closes.
Tattersail's limbs ached. She felt as though someone had been beating her with clubs for the past 2 hours. The last thing she had expected was that bitter taste on her tongue that said something nasty and ugly had come to the hilltop. Such warnings seldom came to a practitioner unless the gate was open, a warren unveiled and bristling with power. She had heard tales from other sorcerers, and she had read moldy scrolls that touched on moments like these, when the power arrived groaning and deadly, and each time, it was said, a god had stepped onto the mortal ground. If she could have driven the nail of immortal presence in this place, however, it would have to be Hood, the god of death. Yet her instincts said no. She didn't believe a god had arrived, but something else had. What frustrated the sorceress was that she couldn't decide who among the people surrounding her was the dangerous one. Something kept drawing her gaze back to the young girl, but the child seemed only half there most of the time. The voices behind her finally drew her attention. Sergeant Whiskey Jack stood over Quick Ben and the other soldier, both of whom still knelt at Hairlock's side. Quick Ben clutched an oblong object wrapped in hides and was looking up at his sergeant as if awaiting approval. There was tension between the two men. Frowning, Tattersail walked over,
"What are you doing?" she asked Quick Ben, her eyes on the object in the wizard's almost feminine hands. He seemed not to have heard, his eyes on the sergeant. Whiskey Jack shot her a glance.
"Go ahead, Quick,"
he growled, then strode off to stand at the hill's edge facing west, toward the Maranth Mountains. Quick Ben's fine, ascetic features tightened. He nodded at his companion.
"Get ready, Kalam."
The soldier named Kalam leaned back on his haunches, his hands in his sleeves. The position seemed an odd response to Quick Ben's request, but the mage seemed satisfied. Tattersail watched as he laid one of his thin, spidery hands on Hairlock's trembling, blood-splashed chest. He whispered a few chaining words and closed his eyes.
"That sounded like Danul,"
Tattersail said, glancing at Kalam, who remained motionless in his crouch.
"But not quite," she added slowly. "He's twisted it somehow."
She fell silent then, seeing something in Kalam that reminded her of a snake waiting to strike.
"Wouldn't take much to set him off, I think."
Just a few more ill-timed words, a careless move toward Quick Ben or Hairlock. The man was big, bearish, but she remembered his dangerous glide past her.
"Snake, indeed. The man's a killer. A soldier who's reached the next level in the art of murder. Not just a job anymore. This man likes it."
She wondered then if it wasn't this energy, this quiet promise of menace, that swept over her with the flavor of sexual tension. Tattersail sighed. A day for perversity. Quick Ben had resumed his chaining words, this time over the object, which he now set down beside Hairlock. She watched as enwreathing power enveloped the wrapped object, watched in growing apprehension as the mage traced his long fingers along the hide seams. The energy trickled from him with absolute control. He was her superior in the law. He had opened a warren she didn't even recognize.
"Who are you people?"
she whispered, stepping back. Hairlock's eyes snapped open, clear of pain and shock. His gaze found Tattersail, and the stained smile came easily to his broken lips.
"Lost art, Sahil. What you're about to see hasn't been done in 1,000 years.
His face darkened then, and the smile faded. Something burned in his eyes.
"Think back, woman, Kalat and I. When we went down, what did you see? Did you feel something? Something odd? Come on, think. Look at me. See my wound. See how I'm lying. Which direction was I facing when that wave hit?"
She saw the fire in his eyes of anger mingled with triumph.
"I'm not sure," she said slowly. "Something, yes."
That detached, reasoning part of her mind that had labored with her throughout the battle, that had screamed in her mind at Kalat's death, screamed in answer to the waves of sorcery,
to the fact that they had come from the plain.
Her eyes narrowed on Hairlock.
"Anomander Rake never bothered to aim. He was being indiscriminate. Those waves of power were aimed, weren't they? Coming at us from the wrong side."
She was trembling.
"But why? Why would Taishrin do that?"
Hairlock reached up one mangled hand and clutched Quick Ben's cloak.
"Use her, mate. I'll take the chance."
Tattersail's thoughts raced. Hairlock had been sent down into the tunnels by Dujek, and Whiskey Jack and his squad had been down there. A deal had been struck.
"Hairlock, what's happening here?"
she demanded, fear clenching the muscles of her neck and shoulders.
"What do you mean, use me?" "You're not blind, woman." "Quiet,"
Quick Ben said.
He laid down the object on the wizard's ravaged chest, positioning it carefully so that it was centered lengthways along Hairlock's breastbone. The top end reached just under the man's chin,